football on off the ball.
We're coming to that stage where, unfortunately, we're losing teams that we were hoping would light up the tournament for a bit more time.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening. You're welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. And coming up, we've got a very busy show for you. From 7:30, Stephen Rochford will join us to talk all things Mayo GAA, and we'll reflect a little bit on the other storylines from the weekend's quarterfinals in the All-Ireland Football Championship. From 8 o'clock, we'll have Fiona Hayes and Alison Miller with us on the line. They're going to pay tribute to Philip Doyle, who very sadly passed away last week at the age of 61. He would have been the head coach for them when they won the Grand Slam in 2013, when they beat the Black Ferns and made a World Cup semi-final in 2014. Also in the 8 to 9 hour, we'll be joined by Claire DeLoon from Los Angeles to talk about LeBron James. It has been confirmed in the past couple of minutes by Jeannie Buss of the Lakers that he is going to leave the franchise, and it's looking like Golden State Warriors is going to be his destination. And then between 9 and 10 tonight, the football show, as ever, is coming your way. We'll be joined by Rafa Honigstein on Germany's latest World Cup nightmare, and we'll also be joined by Auke Koch on Netherlands' latest World Cup nightmare as well. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Eve Conway will be rounding us up on all the day's sports news on another busy day. Eve, how are you doing?
I'm all good now.
And Arthur O'Dea is back with us as well. Evening, Arthur.
What's the crack?
We'll get to Cote d'Ivoire against Norway in just a moment. That was our 6 o'clock kickoff in Dallas tonight. It's 1-0 to the Norwegians at halftime, by the way. A beautiful goal from Antonio Nusa has them ahead. The Norwegian Neymar, they call him, and he's got them ahead at the break. But we should start with last night and with Germany and with the Netherlands. And I think one thing is identifying the fact that your country has just had a disastrous World Cup result. But it's an entirely different thing to not be able to read the room whatsoever in the middle of a disastrous result and what that means for the country. So who I'm talking about here is the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. I'm not sure if you've seen this, but he took to X after Germany were dumped out on penalties by Paraguay last night. And he tweeted, "Even though being eliminated hurts, what a game! With your dedication and team spirit at this World Cup, you have inspired our country. We are proud of you," was what he said on X, taking the toxic positivity route, I think it's fair to say. there was a phrase trending on German Twitter last night, "Welches Spiel," with a question mark, which translates to "which game?" Because everybody was just replying to me like, "which game are you watching?" There was no redeeming feature whatsoever about this. I was kind of thinking about this last night, of losing on penalties is the most inglorious possible way for a German team to lose. Like, this is their thing. This is like South Korea losing on archery, or China losing in table tennis, like settling for silver at the Olympic Games. The Germans losing a penalty shootout, that is not what's supposed to happen.
South Korean archery, yeah. That famed winning. do you think is he trolling? That's a bold avenue to take there by Friedrich.
Not great leadership, I would say. If I was the German Chancellor, I would not be trolling my people after getting dumped out by Paraguay in like a pretty bitter contest as well. Like the tackles that were flying in late in extra time, it had got pretty heated between the two teams. I was watching the BBC coverage of this last night, actually, and Tim Vickery came on and he was like, "The Welsh and the Irish, these are the countries that should be supporting this Paraguayan team because of the grit and the heart they show." Right. They're shithouses, really, is what the Paraguayans were.
It's like, this is all you're going to mount to. Ah, geez, they're chronic, though. Like, they're a rough watch.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't have any vested interest in either. And it's always great to watch a game that goes to penalties, I feel, because at least it's some payoff. But not thrilled at the prospect of having to watch Paraguay again. It's like, you know, it's one of those initial kind of bumps. You're like, oh, God.
See, I had a vested interest in Germany because I really liked their jersey.
Okay. Yeah, that's a nice jersey.
If you know, it's a real shame that we're not going to see it again. That's
probably
be
cheaper now.
Actually, you know, there we go.
Go back in about a month's time.
Obviously, there'd be a great sense of theatre to Paraguay parking the bus against France successfully, but the danger is that
France would be terrible.
It would be very, very.
You don't want them going through. You don't want them going through. What's the payoff?
The payoff is Paraguay dumping France out.
Do you really want to see that?
Not particularly.
No, me neither.
Because I wanted to see Germany versus France, obviously, but I think I fall into that habit every single tournament, just wanting the big teams to play each other. I think there's something in this Paraguayan team, if we can all get behind them with our sort of deep lying park the bus mentality, and they actually do something similar to France as they did to Germany, I think that'll give us some sort of grim entertainment.
I don't know, but they're tough fellas. Good grief. And it's all those worst things. It's great, I suppose, you're supporting the team, but all those, I kind of appreciate that sometimes you just have to go with the decision. But the referee's call to not allow the tag goal. I've never seen a goalkeeper, his reaction be less commensurate with what was done. I swear to God, every keeper could do that. 9 times out of 10, you could run out, just do that. And if that's the letter of the law, every corner is a free out. Don't worry about it. Somewhere, Miguel Arteta is concerned.
I think Jurgen Klopp was making that point as well on German TV last night, that if that goal doesn't stand, then Mikel Arteta and that Arsenal team wouldn't be winning any Premier League titles.
I think not even joking with the Arsenal thing, but what did you think? Did you see that and you kind of went, 6-1, just okay.
I thought Germany was screwed over at that decision.
Okay, grand. I thought it was just me. I couldn't get over it. You're kind of waiting for the angle. And to be fair, the one from behind kind of looks, it's hard to gauge how much pressure he puts on, but then that side angle, it's just like he's just kind of screening somewhat. I mean, you could make the argument, okay, he's blocked off the path, but she may as well clear all the German lads out of there then. You can't just give him a complete free rein. There has to be some sort of ability from the Germans to go against them. I just thought it was scandalous. I'd be infuriated.
That's what he should have tweeted then.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that would have
harnessed a lot of public support from his people.
Get a lot of points.
Of course, there's a bigger Irish angle in all of this. The goalkeeper that you're talking about here in the Orlando Gill, Paraguayan goalkeeper, allegedly has some sort of Irish links. There is the story of the Irishman John Thomas McGill, who arrived in South America in the 19th century, and apparently from generation to generation his name was eventually whittled down to Gill. So anytime you see a Gill in Paraguay, he is a descendant of John Thomas McGill. So that's our connection to
Jesus. We're doing great at this World Cup.
Yeah. I'd love to dig into that a bit more.
I mean,
that's a bit sweeping.
I'm sure somebody will. Weren't we thinking at last year's World Cup the 3.5 years ago World Cup that the Alexis McAllister thing was too good to be true? It's like, it's clearly Scottish. Maybe a Scot way back when was related to him. And actually, when somebody did a little bit of digging,
I didn't do the digging.
The digging was already done. I met the family, but
that's more impressive.
But the work was done during the World Cup, I remember. I think it was an RTE. I think I might be misattributing it to it. I think the print media might have been on the first, going to meet the family in Donabate. And that felt ridiculous at the time. So can we track down John Thomas McGill's family?
I want to know more about John Thomas McGill. Who is this Irish sailor the other side of the world in the 19th century?
Yeah, I think there was under a dictator in Paraguay thereafter, the prefixes and names were banned. So if you had O apostrophe or Mac or other such thing, D-E maybe, you were shortened, basically. Your name was shortened down to something, and I think that's where the origin of Gil was. I'm kind of recounting this from the social media storm that has surrounded this whole thing. So let's do a little bit more digging on that particular one and come back to it. Just on a final one on those penalties, they were both amazing, those penalty shootouts. The drama, there's nothing worse, I've realised, than a perfect penalty shootout in terms of every shot hitting the back of the net. What was the Manchester United Europa League final where it went Villarreal, where both teams scored 10, 11, 12 penalties in a row?
Got back to the goalkeepers and everything.
Yeah.
Did De Gea miss?
Yeah.
Did he lose it? It was saving none.
That obviously, because it makes it all the way to the goalkeepers, that's pretty dramatic. But I think seeing a vast array of misses, whether it's hitting the woodwork or Jonathan Tah firing over the crossbar, that's a far more dramatic way to enjoy a penalty shootout. And also the fact that Paraguay missed two opportunities to win the penalty shootout that's very much, you know, the chapter closed. They are done in this. And you talk about the strength and the pigheadedness of this Paraguayan team. Probably no better example of that than them actually managing to survive that and win the penalty shootout in the end.
It is, and it's funny, you know, even watching it. When it was the guy who came on, wasn't it Bella Balbuena, missed. And I think they were kind of saying he'd just been brought on, whether it was for shootout or not, I'm not sure, but he'd just been brought on. When he missed, you know, that kind of thing, you're like, ah, okay, Germany will win now. But then, funnily enough, when Ta missed, it's absolutely convinced. It's like, oh, it's over. Because no team ever misses three penalties in a row. It's like, it's not going to happen. And when have you seen that happen? I don't recall. It's definitely happened because it happened just like over years ago in the cup final. But like, it's like, you're just so rare that the idea of missing three penalties. So I agree with you, though. It was an extremely... I definitely would choose the ludicrous over the perfection every time. And no more ludicrous than Nick Voltamata.
Yeah.
Good God.
Poor guy.
Do you remember that famous, or infamous, I don't know what it was, hot mic during... It was a Brazil game. I want to say maybe 2014. Can't repeat what was said. It was on RTE with Dunphy about Neymar.
Yeah.
He was... breaking it. It's like, we're not, are we? But if ever a guy was breaking it, there was no way in hell he was scoring. It's unbelievable. His run-up was so weird. And from a guy who'd like, again, it kind of became the initial thing to point to, but like, from a guy who maybe took like the best penalty ever seen earlier in the season for Newcastle, it was an incredible collapse. Their heads must have been fried.
Ben has a good stat here that Balbuena came on in the 120th minute. 8 of the last 10 players to come on after the 115th minute in World Cup / Euros have missed their penalty.
Incredible.
It just doesn't work. Just doesn't work. The other thing is, just on a final point on this, is that we've seen so many penalty shootout roller coasters this year. Like the Republic of Ireland, Czechia, yeah. That was, you know, you take the advantage, you take the initiative, you think it's yours, it goes the other way. Same thing happened in the Champions League final as well, with Arsenal getting an early lead and then managing to screw it up after that. Speaking of which, Dermot Keane has been in touch to say, Owen, Paraguay are a horrible team to watch with those tactics. Maybe it's the Arsenal in you that enjoys them. And Patrick O'Sullivan on WhatsApp says, on the bright side, Havertz wasn't injured and he should be well rested for the new season, Owen. Thanks very much, Patrick. Right, Eve, where do you want to start tonight when it comes to the news round?
Well, I'm going to start with the match that's on right now, as Norway lead Ivory Coast 1-0 in the first of tonight's round of 32 clashes. A brilliant strike from Antonio Nuzo 5 minutes before halftime put Norway ahead. They're looking to equal their best ever World Cup result and once again reach the round of 16, as they did in 1938 and 1998. And then later this evening, 2018 champions France take on Sweden in New Jersey. France won each of their group stage matches against Norway, Senegal and Iraq, scoring 10 and conceding only 2. Sweden manager Graham Potter believes his team will need to play the game of their lives tonight.
Yeah, I'm not sure weakness is necessarily a word I would use when describing the French side, to be honest. I think they've got quality all over, from the start, off the bench. They can clearly change things if they need to, but we have full respect for the opponent, obviously. For the quality of the individuals they are and the team, what they've achieved. They've won the World Cup, fantastic manager. So we know the exciting challenge that awaits us. We have to play the game of our lives, clearly. And the boys are in a really good place, I think, to be able to do that.
Swedish TV, I saw, were yerring away this fixture tonight. They went for a slot on their pre-game show where they went for a combined France versus Sweden 11. And the 11 they went for is Magnon in goal, a back four of Digne, Saliba, Upamecano, Koundé, a midfield four of Barcola, Rabiot, Tchouaméni, Dembélé and Olise and Mbappé up front. So that's the combined Sweden, France 11, according to Swedish TV.
Oh, c'est magnifique.
Yeah.
Incredible self-trolling.
Yeah, it's amazing. We are going to last night's action then.
Yeah, just so a wrap-up from yesterday. Brazil came behind last night to beat Japan 2-1 and booked their spot in the round of 16. They'll play either Norway or Ivory Coast. Then, as we'd mentioned, there were two penalty shootouts as Morocco knocked out the Netherlands and Paraguay shocked Germany. Germany's first ever World Cup penalty shootout defeat as Paraguay knocked out the 2014 champions. And manager Julian Nagelsmann insists his young side need time to grow into a team that can compete at the highest level.
I think it's always like that. If you have a big change, it took time. And probably we need to do a big change. We will see. It's not only my decision, it's a decision of my chiefs, and also we discuss about some solutions for the future. We have a lot of talented players, young talented players, but they will need time. It's the same like in the clubs as well. When you look at Manchester City, Liverpool, it took a long period of time until they can achieve big things. Same in Spain, they had a long period when they do not win any tournament or do not win a lot of games, and then they get better and better. Sometimes, if you do big changes, it took time, and then it could be better in the future.
It's amazing because we've often spoken and heard people on the show speak about the revolution in German football, where they had a particular focus on creating more technical footballers and ushering in a new generation of player that was not too dissimilar from the players that played for Spain in 2010. And it just so happened that the very next World Cup, they were the champions with a fairly technical group of players. And you'd wonder if it's indicative of where football is going as much as where German football is going, that they are lagging behind the other European superpowers at the moment.
Yeah, I suppose, but and they're not alone, which is really interesting, because I suppose if you think about it, like in terms of tournaments, like it's a very strange thing that you're heading into a last 16 and you've not had Italy there at all. The Dutch are gone. Germany are gone. Like that's I'd be interested to know how many times that's possibly happened. Certainly in my own lifetime. So you wonder, like, you wonder if it's something that's, if it's specific to them. Obviously, they have their own problems to solve. But there does seem to be some shifting of the guard. It's very hard to know. Like, it'd be great to have, you know, like a David Goldblatt, who studies football in terms of, like, global kind of trends. It'd be very interesting to know. And even the point that, like, Simon Cooper made in the show last night about, like, the real over-representation of French-born players at this World Cup. And there seems to be somewhere by comparison that got their house incredibly well in order. And never, they kind of had a drop off, but that seemed more personnel based and systematic.
He's also talking about the Dutch born players.
Yes.
And how they have a massive footprint on this. And whether it's the Moroccan team, obviously the Curaçao story inflates that number quite a bit when it comes to the Dutch-born players, but they're one of the failures of this competition, the Dutch.
Sometimes I do think, though, it's as simple as, like, one bad decision can undo an awful lot of good work. And all due respect to him, why the hell is Ronald Koeman in charge of the Netherlands?
Again? Because that's how it goes. That's what's supposed to happen. Van Gaal is going to be there.
It'll be Van Gaal next. They're like, but it's like, it's mad. It's like, how is he the best guy for this job? What is going on? Like, sometimes you just really have to wonder. And I'd love to know, like, I know it's not going to happen, but I'd love to have on. Let's get the head of the KNVB on and get him. What is the process? Yeah. You have a finite list, and it's just, well, whose turn is it now?
Could see the copy appearing in all the Dutch press. The KNVB chief speaking on Irish radio show Off the Ball, explaining his decision to run the entire sport into the ground in his country. We've got a really interesting story here, Eve, on Ringmahon Rangers. What's going on?
We do. So, of course, it broke yesterday that Ringmahon Rangers have opted to give Bohemians a walkover in their men's FAI Cup second round tie next month. The Cork club were due to face Bowes on July 19th, the same day as the finals of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship and the World Cup. With their home ground not an option, Turner's Cross not available, and concerns over attendance, the club decided to withdraw. In a statement released late last night, they said, "Given the logistical challenges, player availability issues, logistical issues with staging the match approximately 30 minutes from our home venue on an already congested sporting weekend, we felt we had no viable option but to withdraw from the competition."
Is this the most unusual dressing room wall material that will ever be used in an All-Ireland hurling semi-final? Galway putting this up, being like, Ringmahon Rangers believe that they're going to have something to worry about on All-Ireland hurling final weekend?
Yeah, I guess so. But like, no more than that, like, I don't think it's always too presumptuous with that. Like, there's an awful lot of train tickets that are booked out of Inverurie, and Kent Station's going to have to be prepared for that, irrespective of kind of, they'll be putting their plans in place and will adjust accordingly if it doesn't go to plan, because every train out of Cork to Dublin is sold out for that morning, like, already. Same at Limerick, like, a lot of people do that in advance, so I kind of have some sympathy for them there, because, you know, but at the same time, it's like, yeah. couldn't wait a few days. Just see. It's like, you know, save yourself some of the hassle. It just looks tin pot then in the end, you know.
Yeah, like Ringnahan did come out yesterday, as you said, Eve, and they kind of made as many efforts as they deemed fit to get in touch with the FAI to find alternative dates, Friday, Saturday, Monday of the same weekend. And the FAI confirmed that these requests had been declined. So that's what they, just to give a little bit more detail as to what they actually said in their statement last night. In terms of Premier League action then, Eve, transfer market is trundling along in the background of this World Cup summer. Tottenham Hotspur have done some business.
They have. So Tottenham Hotspur have agreed to sign midfielder Matheus Fernandes from West Ham, who were of course relegated from the Premier League last season. And the fee for the Portuguese international is understood to be £85 million. And if the deal is completed, it would break Spurs' transfer record of £65 million that they paid for Dominic Solanke from Bournemouth 2 years ago. West Ham bought Fernandes for £42 million last summer from Southampton, which was a five-year deal.
Okay, on to boxing then. We have some details on the Katie Taylor undercard.
We do. So Thomas Carty will lead the undercard for Katie Taylor's fight at Croke Park in September. The Fribthor heavyweight will take on Dave Allen, while Limerick man Paddy Donovan will face Tyrone McKenna from Belfast. Among the other bouts confirmed by Matchroom Boxing today is Emmett Brennan against super middleweight prospect Taylor Bevan. 80,000 tickets were sold before today's undercard was announced, and Katie Taylor's promoter Eddie Hearn spoke to Off the Ball's Matthew Brennan today about whether the bout will be shown free to air and what it means to sell out Croke Park.
Those conversations are happening. I mean, you've got to marry that with the Zone are paying a lot of money to make it possible, but also we want to make sure as many people see it as we can, and they're open to that as well. So those conversations are ongoing, and I wouldn't be surprised as well if there was an additional broadcast on September 5th.
Okay, and then as well, just on the last time you were over here, there was before the tickets were on sale.
Yeah.
Did you anticipate them going so quickly? Was there any hesitation at all within you that maybe we wouldn't get that majority of tickets?
The hesitation came over the last couple of years because I wasn't completely convinced we'd do that number.
Yeah.
And the problem is when you've got an 80,000 arena stadium, if you do 40,000, it ain't good. And that's a huge volume and huge amount of tickets.
If you did that anywhere else, it would be exceptional.
So it's like, are we sure about this? And it's one thing like the people saying to you, come on, Eddie, we'll fill it. It's like, will you? Like, do you guarantee me you'll do that? Yeah. And obviously, I couldn't have been happy. I mean, Katie was so happy and so humbled by the whole experience and support. And this is going to be an iconic moment. Even Croke Park now. I mean, they were completely shocked.
Okay, let's move on to the NBA then. Big news breaking out of California.
Yeah, so LeBron James is set to leave the Los Angeles Lakers, where he has played since 2018. The NBA's all-time leading scorer informed his team that the franchise can continue without him because he will play elsewhere. It has been heavily rumoured that the Golden State Warriors will pursue him once the free agency negotiating window opens today at 11 p.m. Irish time.
We're going to be speaking to Claire de Lune on this from around 8:40 p.m. tonight. She is based in Los Angeles, so I'll be interested to see how they feel about this. There's not quite the same tribalism in the United States, obviously, because of the size of the country when it comes to a player leaving to join a rival. But maybe Golden State Warriors will be pretty close to the bone, not only for Los Angeles fans, but also for Cleveland Cavaliers fans. This was one of the great modern rivalries of the NBA.
I was only listening to a podcast the other day. It was, for some reason, it was going back. It must be, I suppose, it's about 10 years since that 16 final. The amazing one where he wins
3-1 down.
Cleveland. It is funny. It's a funny, no more than kind of the Ronaldo stuff that's happened at the minute. They must be kind of more or less the same age, aren't they? But like,
it's 41.
Yeah, when you reach such a point of fame, and obviously it seems like LeBron James contributing more, to be fair to him, you sort of start to get to control the narrative. Just like, I'll play with my friends. I'll play with guys I really respect and like, and that's just what we'll do, and we'll make it happen. And it's like, you know, salary caps and whatever be damned, not that they're breaching it, but you know, you make it work whatever way. It's like, that's, yeah, it must be nice, you know, when you've so much money.
He's sick of playing with his son. Time to move on to playing with his buddies. Give us the latest from Wimbledon then.
Yeah, so they're a shock today as men's number 4 seed Ben Shelton has been knocked out in the first round by Finland's Otto Vatarin. The match lasted 4 hours and 21 minutes with Shelton losing in the 5th set tiebreak. And then elsewhere, Iga Swiatek got her title defence up and running with a win in 3 sets over Taylor Townsend. And Serena Williams will make her return to centre court this evening as she faces Maya Joint. The match will start in the next few minutes after the conclusion of the Zverev-Blocks match, which ended 3 sets to 1 to Zverev.
They are just about to make their way onto centre court at the moment. Serena Williams and Maya Joint, they have closed the roof as well on centre court, so the noise is going to be pretty electric. But they had literally written it down as 7:26 to walk onto court. So it's probably happening as we speak, keeping an eye here on the BBC, and it looks like it's just yet to happen. Finally, then, we have some news from the IRFU and some rugby leadership appointments.
We do. So the IRFU has confirmed the appointment of four new members of their women's rugby leadership group across the four provinces. 2013 Grand Slam winners Niamh Briggs and Larissa Muldoon have been appointed as women's rugby leads at Munster and Connacht respectively. Former Wolfhounds head coach Neil Alcorn takes up the role at Ulster, while the Leinster appointee is the province's former development coach Derek Mabry. The aim of these positions is to support the progression of 16 to 21 year old age grade players through to the senior game.
Eve Conway, thank you very much for tonight's news round. It is 68 minutes gone in the game between Cote d'Ivoire and Norway. Norway still 1-0 up. They just had another effort, cleared off the line after a corner kick. So Ivory Coast hanging on for dear life here. It was a brilliant Antonio Nusa strike in the first half, which gives Norway the lead and makes them strong favourites at this point to qualify for the last 16. You can text us on 087 9180 180 if you want to get us on WhatsApp. Shifty Lad has been in touch on YouTube to say he remembers a player called Jose Luis Louis Brown for Argentina in 1986 in their winning team. He had Irish descent, a bit of Scottish, bit of Irish there, much like McAllister. And all in the game, referring to last night, 10 out of 22 penalties missed. Shocking stuff. Or great stuff, really.
Yeah. You always see they're imperfect.
Yeah, the imperfection is what gives us joy here. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 1 50 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. We're going to be speaking to Stephen Rochford after the break. And before ads, it's time for the cash machine.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.